Blog Talk Radio.
In the Christian tradition, based on Acts 1:13, the upper room was said to be the site of the Last Supper, i.e., the cenacle. But it was not the upper room found in Mark 14:15. And Luke 22:12 is the site of the Last Supper. However, the upper room in Zion, Acts 1 and 13, located on Mount Zion in the city of David, was the usual place where the apostles of Adonai Baruch stayed in Jerusalem. And according to the Rastafari Encyclopedia, based upon Acts 2 and 42, as it is written, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and breaking of bread and in prayers. It was thus the first church of the Nazarene, our black master and savior, Jesus Christ, and said by many to be the first Christian church. Christian church. Christian church. Christian church.
Then returned they unto Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is from Jerusalem a Sabbath day's journey. And when they were come in, they went up into an upper room, where abode both Peter and James and John and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon Zelotes, and Judas the brother of James. These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brethren.
Maccabee, Hanukkah, Hanukkah, Sameach, right here. Hanukkah season, Maccabee, fighting Isla days, where we resist assimilation into the Gentile ways. Right here. Day one of Hanukkah, Maccabee, fighting Isla days.
Double
Then returned they unto Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is from Jerusalem a Sabbath day's journey. And when they were come in, they went up into an upper room, where abode both Peter and James and John and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon Zelotes, and Judas the brother of James. These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary the mother of Jesus and with his brethren.
December, in households all over the world, people of the Jewish faith gather to celebrate the joyous holiday of Hanukkah. Yet few realize that the foundations of this celebration are rooted in bloody violence. It erupted here, in an obscure Judean village, over 2,000 years ago. At that time, Judea was a minor province under the thumb of a despotic emperor. His relentless obsession to stamp out the Jewish religion would ignite a holy war. From this confrontation would arise the greatest military leader in Jewish history, Judah Maccabee. Under his guidance, the Jews would topple an empire, regain control of their faith, and inaugurate the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah. Yet why is the beloved story of Hanukkah not even mentioned in the Hebrew Bible? And how could Judah's small guerrilla forces defeat mighty armies 10 times their size? What pagan rites of sacrilege were practiced in the Holy Temple of Jerusalem? These are but a few of the mysteries of the Bible. Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights. Though celebrated by Jews for over 2,000 years, it is a story that has mysteriously been left out of the Hebrew Bible, appearing only in the writings of the great historian Josephus and in Catholic versions of the canonized text. It is a story steeped in violence and bloodshed, yet it tells of one of the greatest warriors in Jewish history. In Hebrew, the word Hanukkah means dedication. The festival commemorates the cleansing and rededication of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, which had been profaned by pagan worship. According to ancient traditions, this sacred holiday was instituted by Judah Maccabee in the year 164 before the Common Era. Hundreds of years earlier. On a spring morning in the year 334 BCE, Alexander the Great crossed the narrow sea dividing Europe from Asia. He was 20 years old. He descended on the Near East like a whirlwind. Within 11 years, he had conquered the known world, establishing his own realm on the ruins of the mighty kingdoms he had destroyed. Throughout his vast empire, Alexander established hundreds of new cities designed to bring Greek culture and political organization to the nations he had subjugated. This process became known as Hellenization.
Alexander the Great conquered the area of the ancient Near East, which included the land of ancient Israel. And during that time of conquest, he exacted tribute from the Jews. But he respected their beliefs and their practices and had no difficulty with them observing their customs and their religious observances.
As Hellenism swept through the Middle East, Jews continued to worship their one God. Yet many began to assimilate into local cultures.
Jews spoke Greek, read Greek, wrote Greek. They were familiar with Greek legends, Greek traditions, Greek literature. Why can't you live with knowing Greek and knowing about Greek history and Greek mythology and still practice Judaism? Well, I think most Jews felt that you could.
Assimilation would soon bring cataclysmic changes to the world of the Jews. 400 years earlier, they had returned from captivity in Babylon and begun the monumental job of rebuilding the Holy Temple of Jerusalem, the House of the Lord. Its centerpiece was known as the Holy of Holies, a sacred chamber which once housed the Ark of the Covenant, containing the Ten Commandments given to Moses by God on Mount Sinai. The temple was a magnificent structure, ornamented with intricate cornices, panels, and gates of pure gold. Within its consecrated walls gleamed objects of unparalleled beauty and inestimable wealth. Over the years, the temple's vast treasure rooms were filled to overflowing with gold and silver. But the temple was not only the dwelling place of the divine presence.
The temple was the bank of the people. All the money basically went into the temple in one way or another, either through sacrifices, gifts, or contributions. And the priesthood were, in effect, a kind of hierarchical banking organization.
Secure in their holy city, the Jews were left to practice their unique religion in peace. They were convinced they had nothing to fear as long as they kept the Lord's commandments. But the sudden death of Alexander the Great in 323 BCE brought chaos to his empire. Six of his generals began to war among themselves to gain succession to rulership. One of them, Seleucus, wrested control of a huge territory from his adversaries and established what became known as the Seleucid Empire. Later, Judea fell within this region.
Then Alexander's officers began to rule, each in his own place. They all put on crowns after his death, and so did their descendants after them, and they caused many evils on the earth. From them came forth a sinful root, Antiochus Epiphanes. 1 Maccabees 1:8.
A century and a half after Alexander's death, Antiochus Epiphanes gained the throne of the Seleucid Empire. He would become the embodiment of evil to the Jews. As emperor, it became his mission to civilize what to him were his barbarous subjects. Under his tyrannical rule, the benign Hellenization of his predecessors became a mania of oppression. In his zeal for all things Greek, Antiochus renamed Jerusalem, calling it Antioch after his own name. The indigenous Jews lost their rights of citizenship, and their holy city was transformed into a Greek municipality. But did Antiochus actually try to destroy Judaism, or were there other, more complicated forces at work?
What we don't have, and would like to have, is somebody who tells the story from Antiochus' point of view. We don't have anybody who speaks for the Seleucids, who speaks for the Greeks. All of our sources are Jewish sources.
Biblical scholars believe Antiochus had many sympathizers among the Jewish upper classes, priests and nobility, men anxious to enjoy prestige and power and willing to do almost anything to acquire it. Under Antiochus's rule, an affluent Jew named Jason was actually able to buy the most esteemed and holy office of the high priesthood.
Jason obtained the high priesthood by corruption, promising the king 360 talents of silver if permission were given to establish a gymnasium. When the king assented, Jason at once shifted his compatriots over to the Greek way of life. 2 Maccabees 4:7.
To many traditional Jews, the establishment of a gymnasium was a threat aimed at the very essence of their religion.
The gymnasium in the Greco-Roman world was really not just a place where people went to play sports. It was really a Hellenistic type school in which athletic games were conducted without clothes on, in which the Greek gods were in certain ways worshipped as part of the athletic games.
Some Jews sought to remove the very symbol of their traditional covenant with God, now embarrassingly evident when they participated in the games naked.
We know, for example, that some Jews, in an attempt to compete in the gymnasium, underwent a very painful operation so that they could disguise the circumcision and appear to be uncircumcised.
Hellenization now proceeded with redoubled vigor. The priesthood was again sold to the highest bidder, who immediately robbed the holy temple of some of its gold to pay for his sacred office. The Jews were outraged and rose up against their Seleucid overlords. When rioting broke out in Jerusalem, Antiochus not only attacked the rebels, but pillaged the holy temple. To the Jews, Antiochus was stealing from God himself.
Antiochus marched against Jerusalem. Arrogantly, he entered the temple, taking the golden altar and the candelabrum. He took the silver and gold coins and the precious articles. With this bounty, he returned to his own country, having polluted himself with massacres. 1 Maccabees 1:20.
Antiochus attacked Jerusalem on the Jewish Sabbath, knowing the Jews respected it so scrupulously that they would not take up arms on that holy day, even in self-defense. The streets of Jerusalem ran red with blood. Jewish survivors were taken captive and sold into slavery. Parts of their holy city were burnt to the ground, but the worst was yet to come. When we return,
What pagan rites of sacrilege were practiced in the Holy Temple? And can Judaism survive the murderous tyranny of the Emperor Antiochus? As the Hellenization of the Jews gained momentum, Antiochus embarked on a nightmare course of savagery. Jews were put to death for merely studying their holy books. Sacred scrolls were destroyed, circumcision outlawed. It was an all-out declaration of war on the Jewish faith.
Why did Antiochus IV persecute the Jews? That is the $64,000 question. Scholars have been debating it for well over 100 years.
And the king directed them to follow customs strange to the land, to profane the Sabbaths and festivals, to defile the sanctuary, to build altars for idols, to sacrifice swine and to leave their sons uncircumcised. And whoever does not obey the command of the king shall die. 1 Maccabees 1:44.
Was Antiochus really the maniacal tyrant portrayed in the Bible? Many scholars believe he was merely bowing to the wishes of his allies in Jerusalem, the upper class, the Hellenized Jews, who had adopted Greek culture in preference to their own.
And in truth, this was more of an internal struggle, a civil war, between those Jews who were zealously Hellenistic and those who were extremely rooted in their tradition and belief.
In order to protect those Jews loyal to him, Antiochus built a fortress which looked down upon the Holy Temple.
This citadel was occupied by various Hellenistic Seleucid forces and by Hellenized Jews. It was used by the Seleucids to make sure that there wouldn't be any kinds of riots or any type of uprising.
It was not long before the supporters of Antiochus perpetrated the final humiliation on the traditional religion of the Jews.
Harsh and grievous was the onslaught of evil, for the temple was filled with debauchery and reveling by the Gentiles, who dallied with prostitutes and had intercourse with women within the sacred precincts. 2 Maccabees 6:3.
Antiochus's next action against the Jews would bring bloody revolution. He now ordered the Jews to worship pagan gods inside the temple. Over the sacred altar, a new one was built. Here, unclean animals were sacrificed to the deities of a foreign religion.
The nature of Greek worship in the ancient Holy Temple was essentially to establish images of the Greek pantheon of gods and to offer unclean or unkosher animals on the altar, primarily the pig. And that was, again, viewed by the zealots as such a violation and insult.
In their horror, traditional Jews called the practices which attended the new religion the abomination of desolation. It is a term which has mystified biblical scholars for centuries.
What was the abomination of desolation? Nobody knows for sure. Obviously, it has to do with whatever it was that the Greeks did in the temple instead of allowing the Jews to continue to sacrifice as they had customarily done.
The term abomination of desolation is very symbolic. It's clearly metaphoric. I think what they probably put within the temple were upright stones.
But what were the upright stones? Some scholars believe they may have had an extraterrestrial origin.
There's been a theory that these are meteorites, perhaps, because there is some indication of worship of this kind of stone in the neighboring Lebanese-Syria culture framework. This could have been. We don't know what the stones were. Meteorites are a distinct possibility.
To religious Jews, the rape of their temple by Antiochus was a call to arms. The first skirmish began about 17 miles from Jerusalem, in the mountain village of Modin. Here, a small detachment of Seleucid troops ordered the populace into the town's marketplace. There, they tried to force local Jewish leader Mattathias and his family to sacrifice a pig on the altar of the new religion.
The king's officers came to the town of Modin to make them offer sacrifice. They spoke to Mattathias thus, "You are a leader, honored and great in this town, and supported by sons and brothers. Now, be the first to come and do what the king commands." 1 Maccabees 2:15.
The resistance begins with Judah Maccabees' father, Mattathias. He is the tough guy. "No, you're not going to get away with this. Not only are you not going to make me sacrifice to a deity other than my own or eat pork or abandon the Sabbath, I'm going to fight you."
Tension mounted in the square. Then a Jew among the onlookers meekly came forward to offer sacrifice according to the Seleucid command.
When Mattathias saw it, he burned with zeal, and his heart was stirred. He gave vent to righteous anger. He ran and killed him on the altar. At the same time, he killed the king's officer and tore down the altar. 1 Maccabees 2:24.
Mattathias is pictured, old man as he may be, as coming forward and killing the messenger and the collaborating Jew who was going to sacrifice on this altar, producing an unsurmountable rift then with the authorities, which could only be pursued by guerrilla war.
Most scholars believe a full-scale bloodbath occurred in Modin, but now it was the Jews who were the victors. The representatives of Antiochus lay dead. Mattathias and his sons led the villagers into the wilderness. There they planned to reorganize themselves. To command the newly formed revolutionary forces, Mattathias appointed his son, Judah.
Then his son Judah, who was called Maccabeus, took command. He extended the glory of his people. Like a giant, he put on his breastplate, bound on his armor of war, and waged battles. He was like a lion in his deeds. He went throughout Judah and destroyed the ungodly out of the land. 1 Maccabees 3:1.
The revolution had begun. It was the beginning of an epic struggle that would bring down an empire, preserve a nation, and enshrine the name Judah Maccabee in the annals of history. Mysteries of the Bible will be right back. Holy War to regain the temple and free themselves from the Seleucids would require strength, sacrifice, and endurance on the part of the Jews. To prevail, they would need leaders of uncommon ability. They had found one in Judah Maccabee.
He was a courageous, stalwart, strong, unbending, unshakable, successful military leader, and he inspired a whole population probably that had never previously known war before, never had even trained in war, never thought they could fight. Where he came from, how he arose, what the precedents were, it's impossible to say.
After the initial skirmish at Modin, it is clear that the revolution had gained a commander with a rare combination of righteousness, ruthlessness, and brilliance in combat. Yet little is known about Judah Maccabee's early life. When and how did he become a master at the art of war? The mystery remains. In the wilderness, Judah's army began to grow. He organized daring raids to harass the outlying Seleucid garrisons. As the Seleucid body count mounted, the Jews began to view Judah as a hero sent from heaven, one who would deliver them from the hands of their oppressors. Is it possible that Judah's followers believed he might be a Messiah, divinely sent to do God's will?
Certainly was a really new type of Jew, a warrior Jew with a very strong spiritual bent, a holy warrior. Was he a Messiah for his time? I think the people certainly saw him as such.
As Judah's power soared in the countryside, an urgent call for help was sent to the Seleucid provincial governor, Apollonius. With an army of 3,000 well-armed troops, Apollonius marched upon Judah's ragtag recruits, less than one-third the size of the Seleucid army. But Apollonius had made a grave error in underestimating Judah's determined and desperate followers.
They had this idea clearly of holy war, and for them, numbers didn't matter, the size of the armies didn't matter. In fact, Judas says at one point, according to one of the sources, that he prefers a small army, a guerrilla-type army. The strength is in the commitment, and he says the victory comes from the Lord of heaven, comes from God.
As the Seleucid army marched through a narrow gorge, Judah's warriors descended upon them in ambush. The Seleucids lost over 1,000 men. Legends relate that Apollonius was killed by Judah himself. The first book of Maccabees recounts that Judah then took the sword of Apollonius as his own. The second book of Maccabees gives us a markedly different version, perhaps one of the most mysterious in the entire Bible. It is a story of the supernatural and the miraculous. In it, the battle sword is given to Judah by an angel, the prophet Jeremiah.
Jeremiah stretched out his hand and gave to Judah a golden sword and addressed him thus, Take this holy sword, a gift from God, with which you will strike down your adversaries. 2 Maccabees 15:15.
This is a very mysterious episode. Out of nowhere, we get people coming back to life. We get heavenly horsemen, like in the apocalypse, suddenly appearing all dressed in gold on the battlefield and swinging the battle to the side of the holy warriors led by Judas.
We may never know whether the Seleucids were destroyed by brilliant tactics or heavenly messengers. But soon after this defeat, an army twice as large was sent against the recalcitrant Jews. Again it was vanquished by Judah's superior tactics. Again its general killed in battle. Antiochus finally realized his empire faced a serious rebellion. Enraged, he commanded his viceroy Lysias to destroy the Jews once and for all.
He turned over to Lysias half of his forces and the elephants to wipe out and destroy the strength of Israel and to banish the memory of them from the place. 1 Maccabees 3:32.
The Seleucids threw every piece of armor against the Maccabees they could, including elephants, into that region of the world where they'd never seen an elephant before. And it was supposed to invoke fear in the Maccabean fighters.
Bristling with an arsenal of modern weapons, an army of battle-hardened veterans now marched against the Maccabees. The Bible puts their number at 47,000.
One of the things that one has to remember is that though our sources, of course, are going to embellish this David-Goliath story for all it's worth, in some of these battles, the odds were not all that great against the Jews, and in fact, the Jews might even have had superior manpower in some of these battles.
Whatever the true size of the armies involved, Judah again demonstrated himself a master strategist. Learning that part of the Seleucid army had left its base, planning to fall upon him during the night, Judah surreptitiously abandoned his own military quarters in the hills, ordering his campfires to be left burning to confuse the approaching enemy. Judah then fell upon the remaining Seleucids in the plain below. After their fruitless attempt to surprise Judah, the first Seleucid detachment returned at dawn. In horror, they watched Judah's army mercilessly cutting down their comrades.
They saw that their army had been put to flight and that the Jews were burning the camp. They were filled with panic as they also saw the army of Judah in the plain ready for battle, and they all fled. 1 Maccabees 4:20.
The viceroy Lysias himself was now forced to deal personally with the Maccabees. In the spring of 164 BCE, with an enormous army said to number over 65,000, he marched upon Judea. Lysias was confident that this time the Seleucids would not fail. The Jews had to be vanquished. When we return, how could Judah's warriors prevail over the empire's most experienced soldiers? And what is the surprising connection between the Jewish festival of Hanukkah and the Christian concept of resurrection? Had won many battles under the brilliant leadership of Judah, the struggle to defeat the Seleucids continued. Since the beginning of their battle for independence, thousands had been murdered in defense of their religion. Pious Jews asked themselves how God could let his people die at the hands of the pagans. From this question arose a concept that would resonate for centuries, the idea of resurrection. Devout Jews believe their current tribulations signal the approach of the apocalypse, the final days of Earth. They had faith that God would help them defeat the Seleucids and then miraculously bring back to eternal life those who had been martyred in their cause of freedom.
You dismiss us from this present life, but the King of the universe will raise us up to an everlasting renewal of life, because we have died for his laws. 2 Maccabees 7, 9.
The very terror that was leveled upon the Jews in the time of Antiochus IV and the persecutions prompted this sort of reflection. What's going on before their very eyes was so unthinkable, so unspeakable to people who were otherwise innocent and righteous, that the only way to justify it, to rationalize it, to explain it to oneself, is that in the long run, there's going to be a resurrection.
The emperor's viceroy, Lysias, was not concerned whether Jewish martyrs would enjoy everlasting life. He was determined only that more Jews die. Humiliated by the recent defeat of his most experienced generals at the hands of the Maccabees, he assembled an army of 65,000 and marched into Judea, where the Maccabean rebels awaited them. As the enemy approached Jerusalem, Judah realized the Seleucids would have to break battle formation to traverse a narrow gully. Seizing this opportunity, in a daring attack, Judah isolated and crushed the enemy vanguard. Then, as thousands of arrows rained down, the Maccabees attacked the main body of the Seleucids. Confronted by the implacable warriors of Judah, the Seleucids retreated in confusion and panic. They died by the thousands. Lysias, seeing his huge army disintegrating around him and unable to stage a counterattack, withdrew. He had lost over 5,000 men in only a few hours. With the defeat of Lysias, Judah now controlled all Judea. After 4 years of bloody war, his triumphant forces entered the holy city of Jerusalem. But what they found on the Temple Mount would horrify them. The house of God had been defiled by an altar dedicated to foreign gods.
There they saw the sanctuary desolate, the altar profaned. They saw the chambers of the priests in ruins. Then they tore their clothes and mourned with great lamentation. 1 Maccabees 4:38.
When they came in and they saw these upright stones or whatever they were on the altar, they saw another altar of sacrifice, they were horrified and they viewed the temple as polluted, as unholy, as impure.
The victorious Jews beheld the devastation of their holy temple, its sacred altar covered with the dried blood of unclean animals. In order to purify the house of God, they scrubbed the temple clean. Then they removed the idols and sacrilegious stones which had been placed on top of the original altar.
We know that the pagan altar was removed. Even the Jewish altar, which had now been profaned by having a pagan one put on top of it, was removed stone by stone and a new one built.
For weeks, the Maccabees puzzled over what to do with the sacred stones from the original altar, which had been desecrated in blasphemous sacrifice by the pagans.
They deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offering which had been profaned. They thought it best to tear it down. So they tore down the altar and stored the stones on the temple hill until a prophet should come to tell them what to do with them. 1 Maccabees 4:44.
The books of Maccabees only reveal that the sacred stones were stored somewhere on the temple hill. For centuries, scholars have wondered about their fate.
What happened to the original stones? They seem to have been thrown down by the Greeks or affected in some way, because the Maccabee books tell us that the temple was in ruins, that the buildings had been burned, that there were weeds growing up, that the altar had been desecrated. So there is a mystery there. What did they do with these stones? Where did they put them?
For over 2,000 years, the consecrated stones which made up the original altar have lain hidden and undisturbed. To this day, their whereabouts remain a mystery. Under the supervision of the priests, a new altar was carefully constructed based on the design of the original one. It was a time of exaltation for the faithful.
Because the Holy Temple was such a central place of worship and so revered for its holiness by the Jewish people, the ability to restore it and rededicate it after it had been violated had to represent a tremendous spiritual catharsis for the people.
The consecration of their holy temple was almost complete. The religious convictions so many had fought and died for had miraculously survived. Here, at the holiest site of all, the Jews would once again worship the God of their fathers. And a miracle was about to occur.
Mysteries of the Bible will be right back.
Al-Hazurot, Al-Hamikamot, Shi'atita Lavotin.
Yes, Hanukkah Sameach. Yes, here, Maccabee fighting Isle of Days.
Perhaps the significance of Hanukkah and the Jewish revolt does not lie in a miracle or in a military victory at all, but in something far more profound. The struggle of the Maccabees was perhaps the ultimate battle for religious freedom. Since the time of Judah, the flames kindled in Hanukkah candles around the world each year represent a fight for spirituality. It is a battle that resonates from antiquity until the modern day, not only for the followers of Judaism, but for the faithful of all the world's great religions. Against all odds, Judah and his army had successfully recovered the Holy Temple of Jerusalem. Its triumphant rededication would be the crowning glory of the Maccabean struggle.
Then Judah and his brothers and the entire congregation of Israel decreed that the days of the dedication of the altar should be observed with joy and gladness for 8 days at the same season each year. 1 Maccabees 4:59.
Judah ordained that the dedication of the temple should be observed each year as a joyous holiday. The festival of Hanukkah was born. Its scholars have long wondered why Judah chose to celebrate the new holiday for 8 days. Was he consciously linking himself to biblical events of the past?
He called attention to the fact that when the first temple was built by King Solomon, the festival that celebrated the building of that temple went for 8 days. So Judah was deliberately and conspicuously associating himself with these momentous biblical traditions in order to establish that he is a worthy and legitimate heir to them.
Throughout the centuries around the world, during the 8 days of Hanukkah, Jews light one candle each evening to commemorate the rededication of the temple. But there is also the story of a miracle. It is a tale that is lovingly taught to every Jewish child.
When the Maccabees entered into the Holy Temple after recapturing Jerusalem, they found one small cruse of pure beaten olive oil, which was enough to kindle the candelabra, the menorah, for one day and one night, and the miracle occurred. It lasted for the 8 days and 8 nights.
In Jewish homes throughout the world, lights are kindled in a special Hanukkah candelabrum called a menorah. The menorah commemorates the phenomenon of the oil that lasted for 8 days. Yet the story of the miracle of Hanukkah may not be all that it seems.
The miracle of the oil burning for 8 days that was allegedly found in the temple after it was cleansed is a story that doesn't appear in any of our ancient sources. It doesn't appear in 1st or 2nd Maccabees. It doesn't appear anywhere in the sources of antiquity. And we don't know where it came from.
The story of the miraculous container of oil, which endured for 8 days, was written by Jewish scholars over 500 years after the rededication of the temple. Yet why would later writers feel a need to embellish the story?
The actual events of the rededication are not terribly exciting. And my guess is that the rabbis who saw this
as the pivotal point, recovery of the temple, purification of the temple, rededication of it to the Jewish faith, felt that somehow this needed a little beefing up, and that the story of the oil lamp would do a job on it that neither First and Second Maccabees did.
Ironically, and unbeknownst to most people, the most astonishing aspect of the story of the Maccabees, their victories over the Seleucids, their fight to rededicate the temple, and their joyous festival of Hanukkah, is that it is not even mentioned in the Hebrew Bible.
The Maccabee books were frightening, I think, and therefore we find them, of all places, in the Catholic Bible, and they're not in the Jewish Bible at all. You have to go to the Catholic Bible to find what Hanukkah is all about in the Maccabee books.
Why would the triumphant story of Judah, one of the greatest military heroes of the Jews, be left out of the Hebrew scriptures? Could the overt militancy of the Maccabean texts be the reason?
I think that the rabbinic teachers felt that the Maccabee ethos was too strong for the Jewish people, and it led to these military disasters, the loss of the temple, the loss of nation, of this spirit of unremitting resistance.
Many scholars believe the story was too violent and bloody for inclusion in the canonized version of the Hebrew Bible. Yet the Catholic Church enshrined it in its own canon because the events took place only a short time before the birth of Christ, and because it introduced the idea of religious freedom, a fundamental concept in the development of early Christianity. Much of what we know about this important phase of Jewish history has come down to us in the writings of the historian Josephus Flavius, who lived during the first century of the Common Era. In the year 160 BCE, just 4 years after the rededication of the temple, Judah Maccabee was slain in battle. Only 100 years later, Judea would be invaded by another mighty empire, Rome. Again, the Jews would rise up against their oppressors, but this time, there would be no victory. The Jews would be decimated, their temple totally destroyed, and the survivors dispersed or sold into slavery. More than 1,800 years would pass before the people of Israel would enjoy self-rule in their holy land again. Yet the Maccabeans' struggle against the Seleucids to regain the temple and rescue their religion from oblivion has forever changed the world.
The Maccabean Revolt changed history because out of the blue, we had once again a revival of an independent Jewish state. Without this resistance spirit, without this independent polity, you would not get charismatic leaders like Jesus. Without Judas and Hanukkah, I don't believe there would have been a Christianity.
If there had been no Hanukkah, there never would have been a Christmas. If the Hellenists had succeeded and crushed the Maccabean revolt, the rich, fertile soil from which Christianity was born would never have been there to plow.
Perhaps the significance of Hanukkah and the Jewish revolt does not lie in a miracle or in a military victory at all, but in something far more profound. The struggle of the Maccabees was perhaps the ultimate battle for religious freedom. Since the time of Judah, the flames kindled in Hanukkah candles around the world each year represent a fight for spirituality. It is a battle that resonates from antiquity until the modern day, not only for the followers of Judaism, but for the faithful of all the world's great religions.
And here for Maccabee fighting holidays here in the season, Hanukkah, Maccabees, drastically resistant to Rome. Here, midnight for day one. Yes, I.
Drastically resistant to Rome, drastically resistant to Rome. a life sentence. Can't get original blood, you know repentance. Man, they are in a Abaddon abyss. I lick down elephants. All with thy name gone, thy blood convinced. Drastically resist not to roll. Drastically resist not to roll. Yeah. 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 With them Christian demographics. Them falsify blue, hide the black Christ with them ethics. Them still pan them safe, one of four father politics. Them still have the false image, deceiving the nation with it. Deceiving the nation with it. In a delaying pathological chronic epidemic. The sermon is a death threat clinic. Talking about the devil's system and them working for it. Man who's standing up against it getting hurt for it. Every time I see the God-man is intricate simplicity articulation. Because of human concept limitation. Jarastafari, Jah Black is the first covenant. Jarastafari, Jah Black is the first covenant. Was in the world, and the world was made by him. First man to turn on without brush and comb. Me want to have me language and me want to go home. Rastafari, drastically resist. Can't get original blood through no repentance. Man, they die in Abaddon abyss. I lick down hell fence. All with thy name gone, I blood convinced. Redemption to the blood is a life sentence. Can't get original blood through no repentance. Man, they die down here in Abaddon abyss. I lick down hell fence. All with thy name gone, I blood convinced. Yeah, yeah, I stay, yeah.
Country, we go check Maccabee, we send some sensei. Call Bible. Give me the Bible, original Bible. Give me the Bible, the Maccabee Bible. Split up the Bible in a two. New Testament and Old Testament. I'll be a beggar, Mr. Government. It's to give me, Lord of God, I said the Holy Bible. Give me the Bible, one for me Bible. Give me the Bible, Maccabee Bible. Shall have it done in Babylon. Yeah, give me the Bible, one for me Bible. Give me the Bible, Maccabee Bible, original Bible, cultural Bible, you know, original Bible, no carbon copy, you know. I say you fool black people long time. I say you rob up our language and our culture. Tell black people how you think. Give them all kind of something to drink. Cause give me the Bible, one for me Bible. Give me the Bible, Maccabee Bible. Give me the Bible, one for me Bible. Give me the Bible, original Bible. Black people got to know what to do. A full time sight of delight. Can't watch what's eating from the wines and
Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Adonai Echad, Adonai Echad.
And here for day one of Chanukah, right here, the book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 7 from the Torah for the Chanukah, for the 8 days, the 8 lights, Maccabee fighting holidays. Here, picking up Numbers chapter 7.
Chapter 7.
Day 1.
And it came to pass on the day that Moses had fully set up the tabernacle, and had anointed it and sanctified it, and all the instruments thereof, both the altar and all the vessels thereof, and had anointed them and sanctified them, that the princes of Israel, heads of the house of their fathers, who were the princes of the tribes, and were over them that were numbered, offered. And they brought their offering before the Lord, 6 covered wagons, and 12 oxen, a wagon for 2 of the princes, and for each one an ox. And they brought them before the tabernacle. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take it of them, that they may be to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and thou shalt give them unto the Levites, to every man according to his service. And Moses took the wagons and the oxen, and gave them unto the Levites. 2 wagons and 4 oxen he gave unto the sons of Gershon according to their service, and 4 wagons and 8 oxen he gave unto the sons of Merari according unto their service under the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. But unto the sons of Kohath he gave none, because the service of the sanctuary belonging unto them was that they should bear upon their shoulders. And the princes offered for dedicating of the altar in the day that it was anointed. Even the princes offered their offering before the altar. And the Lord said unto Moses, They shall offer their offering each prince on his day for the dedicating of the altar. And he that offered his offering the first day was Nahshon the son of Amminadab of the tribe of Judah. And his offering was 1 silver charger, the weight thereof was 130 shekels, 1 silver bowl of 70 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary, Both of them were full of fine flour mingled with oil for a meat offering. One spoon of 10 shekels of gold, full of incense, one young bullock, one ram, one lamb of the first year for a burnt offering, one kid of the goats for a sin offering, and for a sacrifice of peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 he-goats, 5 lambs of the first year. This was the offering of Nashon, the son of Amminadab, 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 the son of
Amminadab. The fourth book of Maccabees. This book is like a fearful peal of thunder echoing out of the dim horrors of ancient tyranny. It is a chapter based on persecution by Antiochus, the little horn of Daniel, Donnell, a type of Antichrist, the tyrant of Syria, whom some call Epiphanes, the madman. The Madman. Roman history of the first century records 2 such tyrants. The other, Caligula. The second brilliant Madman. The second Illuminati Madman. The form of this writing, the fourth book of Maccabees, is that of an oration. So carefully timed are the risings and fallings of speech. So devastating are its arguments. So unfaltering is its logic, is the logos. So deep its thrust, so cool its reasoning, that it takes its place as a sample of the sheerest eloquence. The keynote is courage. Degana. Again, the keynote is courage. The writer begins with an impassioned statement of the philosophy of inspired reason. The philosophy, philo, sophia, the love of wisdom of inspired spiritual reason, logos, logic. We like to think of this 20th century past as the age of reason and contrast it with the age of myths. Yet, a writing such as this is a challenge to such an assumption. We find a writer who probably belonged, some say, to the first century before the Christian era, the Messianic era, stating a clear-cut philosophy of reason, a love of wisdom, of logic, reason, that is just as potent today as it was 2,000 years ago. The setting of the observations in the torture chambers is unrelenting. On our modern ears attuned to gentler things, it strikes appallingly. The details of the successive tortures, suggesting the instruments of the Spanish Inquisition centuries later, are elaborated in a way shocking to our taste. Even the emergence of the stoical characters of the old man, the 7 brothers, and the mother does nothing to soften the ferocity with which this orator conjures courage, seeks to inspire courage. The ancient fathers of the Christian church, the true church and the professing church, carefully preserved this book. We have it from a Syrian translation as a work of high moral value and teaching. And it was undoubtedly familiar to many of the early Christian martyrs, the witnesses of the Messiah, who were aroused to the pitch of martyrdom, of witness, by reading it. Hopefully, we will be so inspired by hearing the reading and the orations of the fourth book of Maccabees. One chapter for each of the 8 days of Hanukkah, the feast, the festival of lights, the feast, the festival of relivification, of lighting the light and relightening the light of faith, re-enlightening I and I in the faith. And for those trotting Yahweh truth and life, this is the time to relight the light of the true faith of the King of Kings Christ. Rastafari Hanukkah Sameach, Rastafari joyful Hanukkah. The fourth book of Maccabees. The fourth book of Maccabees, chapter 1. An outline of philosophy, the love of wisdom, philosophia, from ancient times concerning inspired reason, inspired logic, spiritual reasoning. Civilization has never achieved higher thought. A discussion of, quote, repressions, end quote. Verse 48 sums up the whole philosophy of humanity. We'll highlight verse 48 right now as we will be reading straight through. Verse 48, which is the last verse, make a note of that. It says, for in the day when Elohim created man, he implanted in him his passions and inclinations, and also at the very same time set the mind on a throne amidst the senses to be his sacred guide in all things. And to the mind he gave the law, HaTorah, by which if a man order himself, he shall reign over a kingdom that is temperate and just and virtuous and brave. Chapter 1. Philosophical in the highest degree is the question I propose to discuss, namely, whether the inspired reason, the spiritual logos, is supreme ruler over the passions. And to the philosophy of it, I would seriously entreat your earnest attention. For not only is the subject generally necessary as a branch of knowledge, but it includes the praise of the greatest of virtues, whereby I mean self-control. That is to say, If reason is proved to control the passions adverse to temperance, gluttony, and lust, it is also clearly shown to be Lord Adonai over the passions like malevolence opposed to justice and over those opposed to manliness, namely rage and pain and fear. But some may ask, if the reason is master of the passions, why does it not control forgetfulness and ignorance? Their object being to cast ridicule. The answer is that reason is not master over defects inhering in the mind itself, but over the passions or moral defects that are adverse to justice and manliness and temperance and judgment. And its action in their case is not to extirpate the passions, but to enable us to resist them successfully. I could bring before you many examples drawn from various sources where reason has proved itself master over the passions. But the best instance by far that I can give is the noble conduct of those who died for the sake of virtue, Eleazar and the seven brethren and the mother. For these all by their contempt of pains, yea, even to death, prove that reason rises superior to the passions. I might enlarge here in praise of their virtues. They, the men with the mother, dying on this day we celebrate for the love of moral beauty and goodness, but rather would I felicitate them on the honors they have attained. For the admiration felt for their courage and endurance, not only by the world at large, but by their very executioners, made them the authors of the downfall of the tyranny under which our nation lay. They, defeating the tyrant by their endurance, so that through them was their country purified. But I shall presently take opportunity to discuss this after we have begun with the general theory, as I am in the habit of doing, and I will then proceed to their story, giving glory to the all-wise God, giving glory to the all-wise Elohim, Baruch Hashem. Our inquiry then is whether the reason is supreme master over the passions. But we must define just what the reason is and what passion is and how many forms of passion there are and whether the reason is supreme over all of them. Reason I take to be the mind, preferring with clear deliberation the life of wisdom, the life of Sophia. Sophia, wisdom, chokmah, I take to be the knowledge of things, divine and human, and of their causes. This I take to be the culture acquired under the law, acquired under HaTorah, through which we learn with due reverence the things of Elohim, and for our worldly profit, the things of man. Now, wisdom is manifested under the forms of judgment and justice and courage and temperance. But judgment or self-control is the one that dominates them all, for through it, in truth, reason asserts its authority over the passions. But of the passions, there are two comprehensive sources, namely pleasure and pain. And either belongs essentially also to the soul as well as to the body. And with respect both to pleasure and pain, there are many cases where the passions have certain sequences. Thus, while desire goes before pleasure, satisfaction follows after. And while fear goes before pain, after pain comes sorrow. Anger, again, if a man will retrace the course of his feelings, is a passion in which are blended both pleasure and pain. Under pleasure also comes that moral debasement which exhibits the widest variety of the passions. It manifests itself in the soul as ostentation and covetousness and vainglory and contentiousness and backbiting. And in the body as eating of strange meat and gluttony and gormandizing in secret. Now pleasure and pain being as it were two trees growing from body and soul, many offshoots of these passions sprout up, and each man's reason as master gardener, weeding and pruning and binding up and turning on the water and directing it hither and thither, here and there, brings the thicket of dispositions and passions under domestication. For while reason is the guide of the virtues, it is master of the passions. Observe now, in the first place, that reason becomes supreme over the passions in virtue of the inhibitory action of temperance. Temperance, I take it, is the repression of the desires, but of the desires, some are mental and some are physical. And both kinds are clearly controlled by reason. When we are tempted towards forbidden meats, how do we come to relinquish the pleasures to be derived from them? Is it not that reason has power to repress the appetites? In my opinion, it is so. Accordingly, when we feel a desire to eat water animals and birds and beasts and meats of every description forbidden to us under the law, under HaTorah, we abstain through the predominance of reason. For the propensions of our appetites are checked and inhibited by the temperate mind. And all the movements of the body obey the bridle of reason. And what is there to be surprised at if the natural desire of the soul to enjoy the fruition of beauty is quenched? This, certainly, is why we praise virtuous Joseph. because by his reason, with a mental effort, he checked the carnal impulse. For he, a young man at the age when physical desire is strong, by his reason quenched the impulse of his passions. And reason is proved to subdue the impulse not only of sexual desire, but of all sorts of covetings. For the law says, for HaTorah says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Verily, when HaTorah, the law, orders us not to covet, it should, I think, confirm strongly the argument that the reason is capable of controlling covetous desires, even as it does the passions that militate against justice. How else can a man naturally gormandizing and greedy and drunken be taught to change his nature if the reason be not manifestly the master of the passions? Certainly, as soon as a man orders his life according to the law, according to HaTorah, if he is miserly, he acts contrary to his nature and lends money to the needy without interest, and at the seventh year periods cancels the debt. And if he is parsimonious, he is overruled by the law. He is overruled by HaTorah through the action of reason and refrains from gleaning his stubbles or picking the last grapes from his vineyards, or vineyards, if you please. And with regard to all the rest, we can recognize that reason is in the position of master over the passions or affections. For the law, HaTorah, ranks above affection for parents, so that a man may not for their sakes surrender his virtue. And it overrides love for a wife, so that if she transgress a man should rebuke her. And it governs love for children, so that if they are naughty, a man should punish them. And it controls the claims of friendship, so that a man should reprove his friends if they do evil. And do not think it a paradoxical thing when reason, through the law, through HaTorah, is able to overcome even hatred, so that a man refrains from cutting down the enemy's orchards and protects the property of the enemy from the spoilers and gathers up their goods that have been scattered. And the rule of reason is likewise proved to extend through the most aggressive passions or vices: ambition, vanity, ostentation, pride, and backbiting. For the temperate mind repels all these debased passions, even as it does anger, for it conquers even this. Yea, Moshe, Moses, when he was angered against Dathan and Abiram, did not give free course to his wrath, but governed his anger by his reason. For the temperate mind is able, as I said, to win the victory over the passions, modifying some while crushing others absolutely. Why else did our wise father Jacob, our wise father Yaakov, blame the houses of Simeon and Levi for their unreasoning slaughter of the tribe of the Shechemites, saying, accursed be their anger, for had not reason possessed the power to restrain their anger, he would not have spoken thus. For had not reason possessed the power to restrain their anger, he would not have spoken thus. He would not have spoken like this. For in the day when God, when Ha Elohim, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem, created man, he planted in him his passions and inclinations. And also, at the very same time, set the mind on a throne amidst the senses to be his sacred guide in all things. And to the mind, he gave the law. He gave HaTorah, by which if a man order himself, he shall reign over a kingdom that is temperate and just and virtuous and brave. The reading for the first day of Hanukkah. Rastafari Hanukkah Sameach, joyful Rastafari initiation, fighting Isla Day of Maccabees Hanukkah.
My advice to all is to fulfill the Ten Commandments. You are aware of the contents of the Ten Commandments and can elaborate on.
Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Adonai Echad.
The man born blind is healed. And Yeshua and Jesus passed by. He saw a man that was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rebbe, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Yeshua answered, neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of Elohim should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, and that is by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore and washed, and came seeing. Yeshua, Jesus, asserts his deity. And it was at Jerusalem, the feast of Livocation, and it was winter. And Yeshua, Jesus, walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Jews round about him, and said to him, how long dost thou make us to doubt, if thou be HaMashiach, if thou be the Christ? Tell us plainly. Yeshua answered them, I told you, and ye believe not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me. But ye believe not, because ye are not of my sheep. As I said to you, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give to them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. My Father, who gave them to me, is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Yeshua answered them, many good works have I shewed you from my Father. For what of those works do ye stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, for a good work we stone thee not, but for blasphemy. And because that thou, being a man, maketh thyself Elohim. Yeshua answered them, is it not written in your law, I said, ye are Elohim? And he called them Elohim, to whom the word of Elohim came, and the scripture cannot be broken. Say ye of him, whom the Father has sanctified and sent into the world, thou blasphemest. Because I said, I am Bain Ha Elohim, because I said, I am the Son of God, if I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. But if I do, though ye believe me not, believe the works, that ye may know, and believe that the Father is in me, and I in him. Therefore, they sought again to take him, but he escaped out of their hand.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Chag Orim Sameach. Festival of Light. Chag Festival Orim Lights Sameach. Happy, happy. Chanukah Sameach. Happy Chanukah. Maccabim. Samchim. Samchim. Happy Maccabees or Chag. Lechima Shelaha Maccabim Sameach. Happy Maccabees fighting holidays. The reason here day one.
Well, let the righteous be glad. Let them rejoice before God. Before God.
Rastafari. Rastafari. Rastafari.
Maccabim, Simchim, here for day one, double eyes right here. This right here, we call this Hebraically, Judaically, Nearly. Near is light, like a candle, but really a light, like a lamp. Nearly, lamp for I, and I have a light. Yes, I, Rastafari.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Nelly, 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 Nelly. Have a light, have a light. Here, here, here. But you know, if you have the light, the Hanukkah, it's about the oil. So here, tune double I, Simu, Shemen, Simu, pour some oil.
We'll be right back.
Well, let the righteous be glad. Let them rejoice before God.
Sabbatical study, this I Rastafari sabbatical study for this Shabbat strong.
Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad.
Hear, Shema Yisrael. Hear, give ear. Hear for the Chamishi, Aliyah. The fifth reading, Chamishi Aliyah, the fifth up offering up here for this Shabbat. Shabbat Vayesheb. Here picking up the first book of Moshe, the Hebrew book that is called Genesis. Here at the Lamed Beit, at 39th chapter. Joseph tested by adversity. Here, the Chamishi.
Chamishi.
With Yosefa. Hu rada nitsa raima wayayika nehua potifara siris paro sara ha ta bakhima isha mitriya miyada ha isha ma'alima asher hori duhu shamma and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither, there, with Yosef, who rada mitraima. And Joseph was brought down to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, to Kemet, with Yosefa hurada Mitzrayim, wayayikanehua potifara, tsirisa paro, sara ha abachim, and Potiphar, an officer of Paro, captain of the guard, Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian, Ish of Mitzrayim, Ish Mitzri, brought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites, Miyada Ha Yishmaelim, that had brought him down thither. Zeya, Asher, Horiduhu, Shamma, and Yahuwah, Jehovah, was with Yosef, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Wayehiya Yahuwah, Eta Yosefa, Wayehiya Isha, Matzaliach. Wayehiya bebeita Adonayo ha mitri. And his master saw that Yahuwah, that Jehovah was with him, and that Yahuwah, that Jehovah made all that he did to prosper, in his hand. Ayare Adonayo ki Hoa Ito. And his master saw that Yahweh, that Jehovah was with him. Wayare Adonayo ki Hoa Ito would call Asher Hua Ose Yahuwah Mataliach Biyado and that Yahuwah, that Yahweh made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over Beito, over his house, and all he put in his hand.
Wayimat Yosef Chain Bi Ainayo Waya Shareta Oto Waya Yafa Kidehu Allah Beto We call a Yeshalau Natana Biyado.
And it came to pass from the time that I was at, he had made him overseer in Beito, in his bait, in his house, and over all that he had, that Yahuwah, that Jehovah, bless the Egyptian's house, the Egyptian's bait, for Yosef's sake. And the Baraka, the blessing of Yahuwah, of Jehovah, was upon all that he had in the house and in the field.
Wayehiya me'aza. He fakita otoa bebeto wa Allah kol asher yesh lau. Waya bareti hoa eta beita ha mitriya. Bia glala Yosef wayehiya birkati hoa bikol asher yesh lau. Ba bayita uwa ba sada 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 sada.
And hear, Shema Yisrael. Hear the sixth verse. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person
and well favored. Waya izov kol asher lau bi yad Yosef wi lo yada ito mi uma ki ima ha lechem asher hu okel. Wayehi Yosef yefeya toar toar wiyafeya mare'eh.
And hear for the sheishi. Here for the sheishi, the sixth aliyah, the sixth up offering, the sixth reading, right here at verse 7 of Genesis chapter 39, verse 7, for the sheishi aliyah, for the sixth reading, the sixth aliyah, the sixth up offering, the sixth offering up here for this Shabbat, Y-Yeshev. Y-Yehiya ahara ha-devarim ha-eile wa-tisa ha-sheta donayu eta ayineha. Ella Yosefa waya tomer shikva imi. And it came to pass after these things, after these words, wayehi achar hadbarim haele. And it came to pass after these things, after these things, that his master's wife, his master's Ashet, his master's Oset, his master's wife, cast her eyes upon Yosef, upon Joseph. Watisa Ashet Adonayo eta Aineha illa Yosef. And she said, Watomer Shikva imi, and she said, lay sexually with I. Shikva imi, and she said, lie with I. But he refused and said to his master's Ashet, his master's Oset, his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not wotteth with me, with I, in habayit, in the bait, in the house. And he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house, in this bait, than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me, from my, but the I, because thou, the I, art I. Ishto, Esheto, his wife, his Oset. How then can I do this great wickedness, wretchedness, and sin and arc up against Elohim, the true good, the true God, 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 the true God. But he refused. But he refused.
But he refused.
But he refused.
But he
refused. Why ma'ain? Why yomer il esheta donayo? But he refused and said to his master's eshet and said to his master's wife,
wife, wife, wife,
Hain, behold, Adoni, my master,
my master,
my master,
my master,
lo yada'a iti hamaha bayit,
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 bayit. Behold, my master, my Adon, Hain, Adoni, my master, having me, knoweth not what is in the house. Hain Adoni, lo yada'a iti, mah babayit. And he hath put all that he hath in my hand. Wekol asher yeshlo natana b'yadi. And he is not greater in this house than I. He is not greater in Ayanenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. Neither hath he kept back anything from me, from I, but the I, but the I, willo, chashak, chashaka mimeni, meuma ki'im, otach, ba'asher at, ishto, because thou the I, at, ishto, thou, the I, art his wife, his ishet, his eshet, his oset. With
aikh,
e'eseh, ha-ra'ah, ha-gdolah, ha-zot,
ha-zot,
ha-zot, ha-zot. Chat'ati le-Elohim. How then can I do this great wickedness, this great ratchetness? With aikh, e'eseh, ha-ra'ah, and sin and akab. How can I do this great wickedness, this great righteousness? How? We'ech, 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 e'eseh, ha-ra'ah, ha-gdola, ha-zot, and sin and akab against Elohim, the true good, the true God. We'chatalti al-Elohim,
al-Elohim,
and it came to pass. As she spake to Yosef, to Joseph, day by day, that he hearkened not to her, to lie, lay sexually by her, or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time, about this Iowa, that
Yosef
went into the house, into her bait, the bait, to do his business. And there was none, no one of the men of Habayit, of the bait of the house, there with it. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me, lay with me. And he left his garment in her hand,
in her hand,
in her hand, and fled. And got him out,
him out, him out, him out.
Watita pe sehu be big do, be big do lemor shikva imi wa ya izoba big do be yadaha wa ya yanasa wa ya yetsaya. Ha chutz, ah chutz, ah chutz, ah chutz, ah chutz, ah chutz, ah chutz, ah. And she caught him by his garment. And she caught him by his garment. Wa tita pesehu abir bigdo, saying, Leimor, shikva imi, shikva imi, shikva imi, shikva imi. Lie, lay with me, sex with me. Shikba imi,
shikba
imi, shikba imi, shikba imi. Wa ya'izoba bigdoa biya yadaha. And he left his garment in her hand. Wa ya'nasa, wa ya'itseya ha'chutza. and fled and got him out.
Him out.
And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth forward, that she called to the men of her house, her bait, and spake to them, saying, see, he hath brought in an Hebrew to us, to I and I, to mock us, to mock I and I. He came in to me to lie with me, to lay sexually with me. And I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with I and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until Adonai, until his Lord, came home. And she spake to him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou, the I, hast brought to us, to I and I, came in to me, to I, to mock me, to mock I. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with I and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of Ishto, Eshto, of his Oset, of his wife, which she spake to him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, to I, that his wrath was kindled. And Yosef's Adon, master, took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison, But Jehovah was with Yosef. Jehovah was with Yosef, and shewed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Wayahi Yehovah et Yosefa, Wayayeta Elayo Chaseda, Wayitena Chino B'aynai Sar Baita Ha Sohar. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. Wayitain Sar Beitaha Sohara Bityad Yosef Eitakolaha Isirim Ashara Bebeitaha Sohara Eitakol Ashara Osim Sarahu Haya Ose. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because Jehovah was with him, and that which he did, Jehovah made it to prosper. Ein sar beit ha sahara roeh et kol milma biyado ba'asher Yahuwah ito wa'asherhu Oseh Yahuwah
Love you to my heart, love you to my soul.
Delilah,
I talk to her for real, but she's playing a role.
Delilah,
lying to me, that is all you do. Fancy cars and superstars, that's the thing to do. You give up on me, I give up on you. Love is just a lying game for two.
see Delilah is a girl. She wanna gain the world. She's someone that we can but someone that Delilah.
Yeah, that was dedicated to the mystery. Yeah. The Black Queen defends the Black man right here. Yeah.
I notice y'all really can't stand it whenever I make a post defending Black men. There's always a barrage of comments like, we gotta hold them accountable. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for accountability, but when do we not hold Black men accountable?
The Black Queen. Right, the Black Queen against the Delilahs right here. Black Queen defend the Black man again.
I notice y'all really can't stand it whenever I make a post defending Black men. There's always a barrage of comments like, we gotta hold them accountable. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for accountability, but when do we not hold Black men accountable? It's like every day, every time I get on the internet, someone is always talking about what Black men not doing right. As a matter of fact, the only time we do bring up Black men is to hold them accountable for the stuff that they not doing. I mean, it's almost like we're letting our personal experiences and the media, first and foremost, dictate how we feel about our own men. Never mind the several instances of Black men who were protecting Black women. Never mind the Black man who pulled a Black woman out of a burning building. Never mind the Black man who jumped in front of a group of girls and lost his life defending them. Never mind the Black men who were taking 12-hour shifts to defend a Black woman in their neighborhood. Never mind that the majority, the vast majority, over 80% of Black men are married to Black women. We gotta stop letting the media tell us that our men don't love us and protect us. That's a lie. This country is hell-bent on destroying our men. Let's not help them.
Never mind. Jesus. Yes. Here, today's daily psalm right here. Have the 134th psalm right here. First day of Hanukkah Sameach. Happy Hanukkah. The Hag Feast, Orim Sameach. Yeah, Maccabees, Sameach. Maccabee fighting holiday.
Here we have today's daily psalm. We have Psalm 134.
Mizmor Kuf Lamedalet Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot. Shir Hamma'alot.
Behold.
Hineb.
Bless ye. Bless ye.
Barachu.
Bless ye the Lord.
Barachu et Adonai.
All ye servants of the Lord,
kol avde Adonai,
which by night stand in the house of the Lord,
Adonai, ha'omedim bevet Adonai ballelot.
Lift up your hands in the sanctuary,
se'u yedechem kodesh,
and bless the Lord, and bless the Lord.
Uvarechu Adonai.
The Lord that made heaven and earth,
Ose shamayim va'aretz. Yevarechecha Adonai mitzion.
Bless thee out of Zion, 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 out of Zion.
Yes, that's Bless Sinai from Zion. Not Zionism, but Zion. Yeah, look,
the foundation is in the wall of mountains. Jealous is the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things have been spoken of the O city of God. I'll make mention to Rehob and Babylon to them that know I. With the old Philistine Tyria with Ethiopia, it shall be said that this man was born there. And the highest himself shall establish the earth. Jah Rastafari.
Psalm 134.
מזמור קוף למדלת שיר המעלות.
Behold, bless ye the Lord.
Barakhu et Adonai.
All ye servants of the Lord,
kol avde Adonai,
which by night stand in the house of the Lord,
Adonai, ha'omedim bevet Adonai ballelot.
Lift up your hands in the sanctuary.
Seu yedechem kodesh.
And bless the Lord. Bless the Lord.
Uvarechu et Adonai.
The Lord that made heaven and earth.
Ose shamayim va'aretz. Yevarechecha Adonai mitzion.
Bless thee out of Zion. 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 Out of Zion.
מזמור קוף למדלת שיר המעלות. הנה ברכו את אדוני כל עבדי אדוני העומדים בבית אדוני בלילות. שאו ידיכם קודש וברכו את אדוני. יברכך אדוני מציון, עושה שמיים וארץ.
Psalm 134. Behold, bless ye the Lord. All ye servants of the Lord, which by night stand in the house of the Lord. Lift up your hands in the sanctuary and bless the Lord. The Lord that made heaven and earth, bless thee out of Zion.
The whole place is due for help.
Here, at today's daily psalm, a midrash, a study. Today's daily psalm, Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet, Psalm 134. And its theme, greetings in the temple, greetings in Ha-Hekal in the temple. Greetings I bring. From today's daily psalm, Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet. And here, a midrash, a study, seek. Yahweh, seek Jehovah while he may be found. So here, Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet. It's a shir ha-ma'illot. Hine, barku eti Yahweh, kol abdei Yahweh, ha-omdim be-beit Yahweh. Ba-lay-lot. Bless, behold, bless ye, bless your Jehovah, all ye servants of Jehovah, who stand by night, stand in the house of Jehovah. First verse, today's daily psalm, Ashir Ha-Ma'ilot, a song of degrees, Ashir, Shir is song. A song, ha ma'ilot, aliyah. This is the aliyah to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem. They're going up to Jerusalem. They're going up to Zion, and to Yerushalayim. Ashir ha ma'ilot, called a song of degrees, a song of ascents, of the aliyah, the ma'ilot. Shir ha ma'ilot. Hine, behold, barku. Eti Yahuwah, bless Jehovah, y'all. Barku, a command to ye, to y'all, to you all, to bless he who be, who he be. Barku, Eti Yahuwah, Eti Yahuwah, bless Jehovah. Call Abdei Yahuwah, all ye servants, Abdei Yahuwah, all you servants of Jehovah. Ha omdim bebeiti Yahuwah balelot, who by night, who stand, the standers, ha omdim, who stand, ha omdim, we have the Amida, the standing prayer, Judaically speaking, who stand, ha omdim, bebeit Yahuwah, in the house of Jehovah, bebeit Yahuwah balelot. Literally here in the Hebrew, balelot, in the night season. Those who stand in the house of Jehovah in the night season, in the house of he who be, who he be, Yahweh, HaKadosh, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem. Now, what is the intention of the phrase? Balelot, by night. As you said in the Hebrew, it's by night. If it was by night in a singular sense, Balayla. Here's Balaylot, in the night. It identifies, said Rav Yohanan, the disciples, the Talmudim, the disciples of the wise, who occupy themselves with Torah, with Jah's directions, instructions, at night, in the night season, balaylot, in the night seasons. And of whom Ha'el, the true good, the true God, Ha'el Elohim, says, I shall reckon it for them as if they occupy themselves with the priest's service in the house of Adonai, in the house of Adonai, in the house of Jehovah. And Shlomo, Solomon, and Solomon sent to Huram, the king of Tyre, saying, behold, I am about to build a house for the name, for the Hashem, for the name of Yahuwah, Elohai, Hailiai, for the name of he who be, who he be, Elohai, my Elohim, Hailiai, to dedicate, to livicate it to him, and to burn before him incense, aishens, of sweet spices. This is an ordinance forever, for Iver, to Yisrael. In 2 Chronicles, chapter 2, verses 2 to 3. Vayishlach Shlomo, illa Huram, Melech Zor, and Solomon, Shlomo, sent Wayishlach Shlomo to Huram, the king of Tyre, Ela Hurama Meleka Zor, saying, Leimor, Hine Ani Bone Bayita Lishema Yahuwah Elohai. Behold, Hine, I am about to build a house. Hine Ani Bone Bayit for the name of Jehovah, my God, my true good. Lishem Yahuwah Elohai. To dedicate, to livicate it to him. Lehakadish lo, to make it holy, set apart to him. Lehakadish lo, and to burn before him incense, aishens of sweet spices. Lehakatira lefanayo wa ketoreta samim. And for the continual itinerant shewbread, and for the burnt offerings morning and evening, on the Shabbats, on the Sabbaths, and on the new moons, and on the solemn feasts of Yahuwah, of Jehovah, I, Elohim. Ua ma'ereketa tamida, we olota la bokera, we la ereva, la shabtota, we le chodashim, ua le mo'edei Yahuwah, Eloheinu. This is an ordinance forever, for Iva, to Israel, to Yisrael. Le olam zota al Yisrael. Le olam zot al Yisrael. Rav Gidel said in the name of Rab, the words, this is an ordinance forever. Le olam zot al Yisrael. The words, this is an ordinance, or literally in the Hebrew, le olam, forever, zot, this, she, all upon Yisrael. This allude to HaMizbeach, the altar built in Shemaim, in heaven. Beside that, Michael, the great guardian, Melaach, angel, stands and brings an offering. But Rav Yohanan maintain these words refer to HaTalmidim, to the disciples, the Dekan Zamorit of the wise, who occupy themselves with the laws, with the Torot of the priest HaKohen's Evoda, the priest's service, and of whom Ha'el, the true good, the true God, Ha'Elohim, says, quote, I will reckon it for them as if in their days Baiti Yahuwah, the house of Jehovah, were still standing firm. Su yidekem kodesh ubarku eti Yahuwah. Lift up your hands. Su yidekem kodesh. Lift up your hands to the kodesh, to the sanctuary. Su yidekem kodesh ubarku eti Yahuwah. And bless ye and bless your Jehovah. Bless he who be HaKadosh, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem, the Holy One. Blessed be he, blessed be the name. Hear, 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 in today's daily song, Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet, the second verse that reads in the Hebrew, Su'u Yedekem Kodesh U'Baruchu Eti Yahuwah. 10 observances are prescribed for the cup, for the chalice that is used during the blessing, the Baraka of grace, the blessing of grace after meals. One of them being that a man lift up the cup, lift up the chalice with both hands. And the proof? According to Rav Hanina Bar Papa, it is this verse right here, 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 in today's daily psalm, in Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet. So yedekem kodesh ubarku eti Yahuwah. Lift up your hands and bless ye, bless your Jehovah. Uvarku eti Yahuwah. Bless your Jehovah. Rav Shimon ben Pazi, he taught that a priest, a Kohen, who has not washed his hands, must not lift up his hands to give the priest Baraka, the priest blessing. For it is said, Su yidekem kodesh ubarku eti Yahuwah. Now here in the Midrash, the commentator evidently interprets the verb nasa in Sewu to lift up in the sense of the verb natal, natal, that in post-biblical Hebrew may either mean to lift up or to wash. So the commentator evidently interpreting the verb nasa in the command Sewu yidekem, lift up your hands, in the sense of the verb natal, natal, that in the post-biblical Hebrew may either mean to lift up or to wash. Thus, wash your hands, and bless ye, bless your Jehovah, ubarku et Yahuwah. There are three occasions that require one action to follow immediately up on another, upon another. The slaughtering of the sacrificial animal must come immediately after the rite of laying the hands upon its rosh, upon its head. For it is written even in Vayikra in Leviticus chapter 1 verses 4 to 5, and he shall lay his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and he shall kill the bullock lifnei Yahuwah before Jehovah. The bracha, the blessing over the bread, must be said immediately after the rite of washing the hands, for it is said, wash your hands, ubarku et Yahuwah, and bless Jehovah. The Shemona Esrei, the 18 benedictions, must be said immediately after the bracha, the blessing of redemption. For it is said, even in Psalm 19, verse 15, let make the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable before thee, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Yishu l'ratzon imrei fi yaweh hegiyon alibi lefanekai Yahuwah tzori yaweh goali. May the words of my mouth and the meditation, the meditation of my heart be acceptable before thee. Let them be acceptable before thee. Yehiyu al-ratzon, the words of my mouth. Imrei fi, and the meditation, the meditation of my heart. Wehegion libi, before the eye, O Jehovah. Lefaneka Yahuwah, lefaneka Yahuwah. Tzuri, my rock, Tzuri, and my redeemer, Wegoali, Wegoali. And what does Scripture go on to say in the next psalm in Mizmor Kaf, Psalm 20, Hebraically, verse 2? Yahuwah, Jehovah, answer the eye in the day of trouble. Ya'anekai Yahuwah b'yom tzara, Yahweh, Jehovah, answer thee, I. Ya'anakai Yahuwah, in the day of trouble, b'yom tzarah. Rav Jose Barbun taught, when a man performing a sacrifice slaughters the animal immediately after the laying on of the hands, no fault will mar the sacrifice. When a man pronounces habraka, the blessing, over the bread immediately after the washing of his hands, hasatan, Satan will bring no accusation against him during the meal. Finally, when a man says the Shemona Esra, the 18 benedictions, immediately after the braka, the blessing of redemption, hasatan, Satan will bring no accusations against him in the course of the day. Mizmor Kof Lamed Dalet Shir HaMa'ilot Hine Barku Et Yahuwah Kol Abdei Yahuwah HaOmdim BeBeit Yahuwah VaLeilot Su Yidekem Makodesh U Barku Et Yahuwah Ye Barkekai Yahuwah Miyatz Yon Ose Shamayim VaAretz. A song of ascents, a song of degrees, Shir HaMa'ilot. Behold, Bless ye, bless y'all, Yahweh, Jehovah, all ye servants of Jehovah, Yahweh, that stand in the house of Yahweh, Jehovah, in the night seasons. Hine. Barku eti Yahweh, kola avde Yahweh, ha'omdim bebeti Yahweh, ba'leilot. Lift up y'all hands to the sanctuary, and bless ye, bless y'all, Yahweh, bless Jehovah. Su'u ayidekem odesh, barku eti Yahweh. Yahweh, Jehovah, bless thee, the eye out of Zion, even he that made heaven and earth. Yebarekekai Yahweh, mi Zion, ose shamaim, wa aret.
Yes. So here. According to the Royal Order of the Ethiopian Hebrews, we have on this day one of Hanukkah, Maccabees fighting holiday, Psalm 134, very interesting scene in the connection with Hanukkah right here. That was the Midrash. Here on the outro, I'd like to share this, the Barku. Mention the Barku. Bless your Barku. Barku et Yahuwah. Zooming in on today's daily psalm, Barku, the Barku right here as it connects with the Siddur, the prayer and the standing, the act of standing and the standing prayer, standing in the congregation of the Tzaddikim, the righteous.
This look-a-look psalm here, Psalm 134, sealing up the last of the ascension psalms, the Shir HaMa'alot of the going up. We're going to write up the Royal Amharic, but just to give a little commentary right here. Why this psalm is important is because many of the central Judaic, Hebraic worship themes are kind of exemplified in this little psalm here of these three verses, Abu Ghi, Aleph, Beit, Gimel verses, Abu Ghi, right here, these three verses. First of all, there's the first invocation in worship, Hebraically, Judaically, of the Barku, Barku, bless y'all, Barku, Barku. Some Yehudi might say Barku, 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 but Barku, 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 speaking to all of y'all. Hine, Barku, et Yahuwah, bless y'all, he who be who he be. Hine, look, see, here it is, see, here it is, see, here it is, see, here it is. See. Call, Avde, Yahuwah, call all, Avde, Avde. Abde, servants of Yahweh, Yahuwah, servants of he who be who he be, call Abde, Yahuwah. Ha Omdim, that stand, or the standers, literally here in the Hebrew, the Omdim, from the Ahmed, similar in the Ge'ez, Ethiopically speaking, you know, the pillar, standing, the sense of standing here. Ha Omdim, the standers, Beit Yahuwah, in the house of he who be who he be, Beit Yahuwah, ba'laylot, in the nights, ba'laylot, or ba'laylot here, ba'laylot, in the ha'laylot, in the nights, bringing that sense of the night seasons. So here we have this first verse right here as we have a greetings in ha'hekal, in the temple, right, theocratically speaking, in the palace, in the temple. The servants of he who be who he be, Avde Yahuwah. Modern Jews would say Avde Adonai. Call Avde Adonai. Call Avde, the servants of Yahuwah, he who be who he be. The ministers, speaking here to the ministers in HaHekal, in the temple, even the temple in Yerushalayim, especially pre-70 A.D. But here we get the Amidah, the sense of the Amidah. So the first invocation from the Siddur, the Yehudi, the prayer book, and the first invocation is the Barku, Barku, calling out, right? Bless you all of you all. Look, see, here it is. Here's the time. Here's the season. Here's the space. Hine, hine, Barku et Yahuwah. Bless he who be who he be. Call Abdei Yahuwah, the Abdei of Yahuwah, the Abdei of Jehovah, the servants of he who be who he be, to stand before Lifnei Yahuwah, before in the presence, in the POV, this in the tabernacle, in the temple sense, this is before the ark, in the direction of the ark. So here's a very interesting kind of segue, right, to the Israelites of Ethiopia and to the Orthodox Tewahedo Church and what some call ark Christianity or ark, the messianic way of the Messiah, with that groundation of the order, right, that stand before. Because the question is, well, how do you stand before Jehovah if he is all and he is in spirit and in truth? It's before the ark, that stand before Yahuwah, the symbolic of his throne, right, to minister, to serve to him. Here we have Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 8. This is here spoken in the context of Halloween, right, of the Lewim or the Lewawion, the Levites. In the night seasons, Ha'omdim, that stand bebait in the house of Yahuwah, know ye not that your bodies are the temple, if the Holy Spirit abide and dwell. So even in the new covenant, the Brit Chadasha, the renewed covenant sense, right, we come to that more fuller comprehension, as when Rabbeinu Yeshua spoke about the temple, you know, tear it down and you'll build it again in 3 days. They laughed at him because they didn't understand, they didn't overstand, lo mavin, they didn't overs, right, that he spoke of the body. So speaking of the body in the, you know, in the new covenant sense, ha'omdim bebeit Yahuwah ba'leilot, in the night season, ba'leilot. The Levites, Halloween, according to 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 33, ha'leilim, they were employed in their walk, in their work, day and night. According to 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 33, we read that the Levites, the Lewawion, they were employed in their work day and night. They are exhorted, are built up, are bigged up, right, to fill and to fulfill the night, ba leilot, the night watches, with prayer, tefillah, with tzelot, tzelotat, as well as watchfulness, wakefulness, watchfulness, being alert, and to make and allow, to allow their hearts, heartically speaking, to go up, to allow their heart, heartical, their hearts to olim, olim, to aliyah, to go up, right, to go up in baraka, in blessing, in word, sound, power, invocation of peace and prosperity to ha Elohim, to ha Elohim. We have this here even in the first verse. Hine, behold, look, see, here it is. Barku, all of y'all, barku, barku, et Yahuwah, call Abdei Yahuwah, ha'omdim bebeita Yahuwah, ba leilot. The aggregation, speaking to the aggregation, the voice of praise should echo and resound, right, through the silent night, ba leilot, and float over the sleeping city, right? The congregation, the aggregation right now is about to leave, right here, Mizmor of Lamed Dalet, right here as the shir, a song. Now note this, disciples, that song is different than psalm. Song is different than psalm. We have shir, singing, a shir, a song, ha ma'alot, of the going up, of the aliyah, speaking of the tribe, right, to Yerushalayim, the pilgrim feast and festival. And the congregation is about to leave during the time of the Shalosh Regalim, the three times in the year, the pilgrim festivals, and to go forward, to go home, to leave the crowded courts, the courts of Yahuwah, at the close of a day of worship, and now gives this parting, this is a parting salutation. Within churchical senses, it's like the Hebraic, the dismisser, so to speak, right? As you dismiss ones, you know, the salutation, right? Now giving that parting, shalom, that salutation, and also the charge. There's a charge, a commission here to those who remain. So some will trot forward, and some will stay in the Isla Gates, in the Heikal, in the temple courts, and in the temple. Second verse here, that was the Aleph verse. The first verse, the Aleph, so the Abu Gi. Here, the Aleph, Beit, the Gimel. First verse again, Shir HaMa'elot. Hine barku et Yahuwah, kol abdei Yahuwah, ha'omdim bebeit Yahuwah, ba'leilot. Here's the Beit verse, right, the second verse. Lift up your hands, put your hands up to the sanctuary, and bless y'all, he who be, Yahuwah, bless y'all, Jehovah. Su'u yidekem kodesh. Su'u here is also a command word, su'u, saying su'u, right, to one person like sa, right? Su'u is like to many, all of y'all, speaking to all of y'all, like to lift up, right? Su'u. Yidekem, su yidekem, su yidekem. Lift up your yad, your hand. Yidekem, your hand. Kem, yidekem, su yidekem. Kodesh, 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 from the kadash, to set apart. Right, often the word like to hallow, to make holy. In that sense, the operative word is to set apart. Right, to the set apart, to the kodesh. The kodesh is like the holy, is the holy place. In the direction of the sanctuary, the Kodesh, right, the Holy of Holies, where the Ark, the Aron HaBrit, lift up your hands in tefillah, in prayer. And here's where we have a good example, right, among those Israelites of Ethiopia and among the true church and the professing Ethiopian Tewahedo church, of that lifting up of the hands in prayer. Also, this is found in Psalm 28 and 2, as well as Psalm 141 and 2. Right? We're looking this Hebraically. Let's just go to Psalm 28 and 2, just for a point of reference. You know, just here, and the season is little, but it's a Talawah psalm. So we have the blessing, the barku. Some say borku, modern Hebrew, borku. But the barku. Bless y'all. Right, he who be, who he be. And the omdin, the amada, the amida. We say the amida, amida. Amida is like the standing prayer. So here in the second verse, it says right here, hear the voice of my supplications when I cry to thee, when I lift up my hands toward thy holy sanctuary. In the tabernacle, in the temple sense, this is speaking of the place, direction where the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant, symbolic of the, even that messianic throne, the throne, right? Here we have Shema Kol Tachnunai, Be Shawei Eleika, hear, Shema, to hear, the command to hear, Shema, speaking to a male, Shema, hear the voice, Shema, call, the voice, Tachnunai of my beseeching for Hannah is grace, Chain and Hannah, Tachnunai, my supplication, my beseeching for grace, undeserved merit or favor. Bishawi elecha. Modern Hebrew, they'll say, bishavi. But more Afro-Semitically pointed, bishawi. What is shawi? in my shawi. What's my shawi? Just as it sounds, even, you know, even after the Tower of Babel, with the Holy Spirit, you can discern shout. Bishawi, shawi, my shout. Not boo-hoo-hoo cry, but my shout. Ya, ja, bishawi, ele ka, ele, to the eye, male. When I lift up my hands, binasi, nasi, and in my lifting, yadai, 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 my hands, yadai. Yadi, yadi is my hand, singular. Yadai is my hands, like both hands. Put your hands up. Bi nasai, yadai, ila devir, ila debir, kadishaka. Now, here's some interest right here. Just a build on today's daily song. Right here. So here, what we have in this verse, when I lift up my hands, binasi yadai, towards il devir, debir, debir, ancient pointing debir, modern Hebrew devir, devir, the debir, the deber, deber in the Amharic and the good is the deber, the holy place. But actually, it's the oracle, because the word debir come from the Hebrew dabar. Dabar means to speak, to say, dabar, right, dabar, and also the word, dabar, in the beginning was ha-dabar, ha-davar, and the word was with ha-lehim, so it's a place where his word is, also pointing to the ark, remember the 10 words, the 10 commandments written by ha-lehim's own digits, own finger, illa debir, to the oracle, kadishaka, kadishaka, of the I, holiness, of your set apartness, of your sanctuary. So the lifting up of my hands, a gesture of prayer, tefillah, symbolizing the offering of the heart, heartically speaking. May I and I lift up our heart with our hands to Ha'ilahim and Shemayim. We have this in Lamentations chapter 3, verse 41. Thy holy sanctuary, debir kad shekah, right, in the Hebrew, to the debir of thy sanctuary, of thy holiness, the innermost, to go to the inner, in the innermost of the inner, right, the innermost part of the holy of holies. Then we also have right here, 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 Likubatalua, I'm going to move forward right here. We have Psalm 141, let's go to 141, 141, and what is it, the second verse as well, 141, it might be a verse difference, but 141, let's get there, 141, actually, yeah, it's the second verse here, Mizmor Kof Meim Aleph, let my prayer, may, make my prayer, may my prayer, be set forth as aishents, as incense before thee, the eye, the lifting up of my hands, as the evening sacrifice. So let my prayer, I don't have aishent, so let my prayer be like the aishent. I don't have a sacrifice, so let the lifting up of my hands be as the evening sacrifice. Tikona tisalati kitoret lefaneka. Tikon, to nakon, konen, konen, mekonen. Tikon, to set, to establish, tikon, tefillati, my prayer, my tefillah, kit oret, the aishens, kit oret lefaneka, before the eye presence, before the eye faith, lefaneka, the lifting up of my hands, masaat kapai. Here we don't have the yadai, the hands, but here we have the palms of the hand, the cup, the cup. Kapai, the palms, I put in my, lift up my hands with the palms up. Masa'ata kapai minchat areb, minchat, the mincha, the evening offering, the afternoon evening sacrifice, the minchat areb of the areb. So here we also have this brought out right here as well with the aishens, the sacrifice and the prayer for aishens, and the lifting up of the hands for sacrifice. So we can see that new covenant, even in the old covenant sense. So here, once again, Psalm 134, this Likubatalua Psalm, how it lays out the basic structure of worship, the basic, some basic principles. Su'u yidekem kodesh, lift up your hands to the Kodesh, to the sanctuary, that Devir, Kadishaka, Kadisho, Ua Varku, U and Barku. So again we have Barku. Bless y'all, U Barku, et Yahuwah, and bless y'all, he who be who he be. Yebarekeka, Yahuwah mi Tzion. He who be who he be, bless thee from me, Tzion, from Zion. Yebarekeka, may he who be who he be, bless the I. Right? The I, male, singularity, bless the I, mi Tzion, from she, from Zion. Even he that made the heavens and the earth. Osei Shemayim Wa'aretz. Osei, the one that Asa. Osei, the maker, the one the maker. Shemayim, heavens, Wa'aretz, and the earth and the earthly plane. So this here is said to be the response of the officiants for the first half of the verse, even more in Psalm 128 and 5. Bless thee, bless each of the I. He who be who he be, who made the heaven and the heavens and the earth. So here, brothers and sisters, just to bring that out right here. Know we're going to segue to the Royal Amharic right here. But once again, to hear the Amharic and then hear the verse by verse, likewise, side by side. Yes, I, Rastafari.
Mazmur Mato Salasasos, Bekenif Mato Salasa. Yemaereg Mazmur. እነሆ እግዚአብሔርን ባርኩ በአምላካችን ቤት አደባባዮች የምትቆሙ እናንተ የእግዚአብሔር ባሪያዎች ሁላችሁ በሌሊት በቤተ መቅደስ ውስጥ እጆቻችሁን አንሱ እግዚአብሔርንም ባርኩ ሰማይንና ምድርን የሠራ እግዚአብሔር ከጽዮን ይባርክ.
Yes. Heal up, Queen Makeda. Yes, I. Here, Royal Amharic.
Today's daily psalm is Mor Meto Salasa Arat, Psalm 134, known as Yesarka Mezmor. It's interesting, Yesarka of like the evening, speaking of the evening and of the evening and of the evening and of the evening and of the evening and